From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 7th day of August 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at globalcommresearch.com. That's globalcomm, C-O-M-M, research.com. And we'll also take up the weather forecast today with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Along the way, if you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week, otherwise a portion of it. We had a really good discussion about quantitative easing. Remember that from the 2008 recession and the difference between it and the government spending that's happening now and what impact that might have on agriculture and the economy going forward. Should be a really good, great conversation for you to listen to. A good show for you today, too, on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today down 3.5 cents. It settled at 307.75. December 320.75, down 3. And the March contract 2.75 lower, $3.32.75. Next year's July corn down 2.75 at 347.75 cents. Soybeans August contract down 10.5, $8.70.25 the settlement price. November, the harvest month at 867.5, 10.5 lower, and January down 10.5 at 874. Next year's July at 888.25, down 10 cents for the day. Bean oil futures 17 cents lower at 31.35. The bean meal at $280 even, down 70 cents on the afternoon. December wheat futures down 4.75 at 503.5. The hard red there at 427.25, down 1. That December contract at 503.5, of course, the soft red. Live cattle futures in the August up 17.5. However, the October, which is really the lead now, down 52.5 at 106.45. And August feeder cattle for 100 pounds down 75 cents at $142.72.5. Lean hogs, $51 even, up $1.25. Crude oil futures, 62 cents a barrel lower at $41.33. Ethanol futures at $1.12, down 4 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 2.6. And natural gas for the day at $2.23.5, 6.9 cents of a cent. Higher, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, about 119 points. Lower, the dollar is up 0.662 for the day. Mike Zuzlow at globalcommresearch.com now joins us. Oh, hey, Mike, thanks so much. That's a new web address. You haven't changed, actually, the name of the company, right?
No, not at all. The former website, globalanalytics.biz, still works fine, and it's directing everything to my new WordPress website, and that's the globalcommresearch.com. With the increased technology in terms of emails and spam filters and things like that, the globalcommresearch.com helps me get more out without going into people's spam filters, just because I'm able to control it more. So making that move now, and as I said, both websites work, but in case the tightening up of security happens more and more and more, and that BIZ website gets caught up in the email issues, then I won't have to worry about that.
Right. Well, good move. Global Research or globalcommresearch.com again. Take me a while before I get it all worked out in my mind every time, but you know, it's actually really easy. globalcommresearch.com, com for commodities with two M's in it. So it rolls off the tongue pretty easily. And what I have found, and I know because you and I've had this discussion, like willag.org, because it's the name and the website both, I don't have to repeat things all the time. It's the name.
Yeah.
It's the name and the website, and so just using the website as the name makes a lot of sense. And many companies, I can think of two or three of the commodity analysts actually that do it now as well. And you were among the first of them. So,
well, you were the pioneer in it, Todd. I thought it was a great idea when you started it, and it was just a great way. It's easy, and plus the poor clients don't have to. And myself don't have to figure out how to spell analytics anymore.
Yeah, I tell you, I misspell that more often than not. You know what? Our discussion here is a lot better than the discussion we would have to have about the marketplace today.
The listener probably can tell that we're filling time right now because of the ugly markets that we've had this week.
Yeah, you don't want to talk about those markets. Bean market down another dime today. What happened?
I think the big thing that happened with the soybeans was we finally ran out of steam with the spread. The market had been feeling pretty good about buying beans and selling corn. And, you know, we had another Chinese sale this morning that was the largest one-day sale since June 11th. But it had nothing to do with the trade mindset because the trade, as we talk about on Commodity Week this week, was really all about supply because of USDA. And I think one of the things that's starting to work into the trade mindset, and I saw it a lot more on the news wires today, was the fact that the U.S. and China were going to start talking again, high-level trade talks at the end of next week. And I did find out from some of my Asian sources that because of one of our cabinet members going over to Taiwan in the next couple weeks to visit them personally, China's decided to do live fire drills off the coast of Taiwan, is being reported by one of my Taiwanese sources. And so things are ratcheting up politically, and I think this is in greater part, bigger picture spectrum of why the ag sector is not being bought right now. Not only is there a USDA report around with a lot of great big fat pre-estimates by private sources, but we also have this unsettled issue on the trade picture with China and then most recently with Canada. And I think one of the things, jumping over to livestock real briefly, is we had a real big short covering rally Friday in the hogs specifically, and that helped the cattle. I think it was because Canada came back with tariffs against U.S. aluminum instead of anything that had to do with agriculture like hogs or feeder cattle or live cattle.
Yeah, so I watched the Deputy Prime Minister Freeland make that announcement earlier today. Some interesting things about that, of course, USMCA is in place. Interestingly, the Canadians still won't refer to it as that. They call it new NAFTA, which I thought was funny. And then, of course, they are going to retaliate reciprocal dollar for dollar on aluminum products. So they made note that the president was at the Whirlpool plant earlier in the week, and that those machines would have a tariff on them coming into Canada because they have aluminum in them. So there are lots of things happening that we really have to pay attention to, and farmers still have to market. It still has to take place.
Oh, yeah. And I think this is where, the undervalue overvalue mindset that I've worked on for the better part of 15 years now is something that I think becomes more and more important as time goes on, because I had many more clients call me Friday after the podcast airing of the Commodity Week program on your website last night that sent pictures and called me and suggested to me that they are a long way away from reaching that total yield number that the market, I think, is trying to dial in right now ahead of next week's report. And I think the wheat market, to me, is the biggest disappointment and continues to be the biggest disappointment. And I think that's where, again, I'm not going to get my overvalue levels hit unless I get the wheat market underneath me. And so it's not hard. It's not calculus. It's pretty simple math. We just need a shift in sentiment, and it starts in the wheat market.
How soon do you think?
Well, the charts would say pretty much right now. We filled a gap in the soft red wheat daily continuation that was 499 and then another one at 495 on Friday. And I felt like after midweek, it became a technical momentum driven market and fund driven market. And if that's correct, and we filled gaps on Friday, as long as USDA doesn't throw anything crazy at us on Wednesday's report, I think it could start right after the USDA report. And seasonally, if I'm more accurate with the 2016 model year for corn, it would make sense that we would try and carve out a low in corn by the end of August. And typically, wheat leads the corn by 30 to 45 days based upon my research. So that's the best I've got right now.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with me today.
Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo joins us from globalcomresearch.com. That's globalcomresearch.com. He is in Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday afternoon, Eric Snodgrass now joins us from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible to discuss the weather forecast. Boy, Eric, it has just been a magnificent week. A great start to the month of August. And it's been below average, I suppose. Is that right?
Yeah, several degrees below average. And in fact, I think a lot of folks, I saw people walking through my neighborhood last night wearing jeans and sweatshirts. It was a little chilly at one point. And yeah, it's highly anomalous compared to the rest of the summer, right? I mean, we at times would get a little, you know, brief shots at some cooler weather, but nothing that lasted 5, 6, 7 days like this cool shot has. And it's still got another couple of days on it. So enjoy today and enjoy tomorrow, because the pattern is transitioning a little bit here as we go into next week with some heat coming back on and also quite a few chances for rainfall next week.
Well, I want to talk about that in a moment, but we better talk about the rainfall that has been recent. How much coverage in this last, week or so?
Well, it started off with places from Missouri cutting through southern Illinois over to the Ohio River Valley that got rain. And there were some places in the Ohio River Valley that desperately needed it. Then things dried out here. But then just over the last 24 hours, we actually had some big storms that rolled right through the mid part of Iowa, like hit near Boone, Iowa. And that's one of those places that's been very, very dry for the last 45 days and has had quite a bit of heat there. So that's been the pocket, that last stronghold of drought in the Corn Belt that did get some rain, but understand it was very local. In other words, not everybody got a drink out of this, but I saw some reports of 2.5 inches of rainfall in some places, which was desperately needed there in Iowa.
Yeah, just so those who don't know where Boone is or don't recall, it's not very far from Ames, so kind of in the center of the state. It's also home to the Farm Progress Show, or would have been this year for sure, had that show been able to take place. Of course, that one's going to happen online. Now, let's look further into the month of August. You said there's some changes coming in the near term and maybe the longer term?
Yeah, so the atmosphere is wanting to go back to what it was doing in July and June, and that is the tropics are going to go get stagnant again and shove a what we call the phase one and two of the MJO back into place. So we're going to take everything back to Africa again, and we thought it was going to stay relatively open and moving, but the tropics really just want to shut things down, but not our tropics, the tropics over there in the Indian Ocean. So what that means for us is we're going to see the atmosphere go back to the state that it wanted to be in back in July. And therefore, our temperatures start to climb back up, and we got these wide-open Gulf of Mexico moisture transport set up going, and it's going to give us chances for storms starting Sunday, but then lasting through much of next week. But the heat's coming back on. We might see some high temperatures even touching 90 degrees, and with the humidity, that's going to be the name of the game. Now, that longer range was just released to us from the European model. And so thinking now beyond August into September, October, November, I honestly think that overall it's a pretty positive signal, and what it's shown is warm. So at this point, we'd have no reason. There's no reason to say, oh, look out for an early frost. I don't even want to say that F word, this early, but the models aren't hinting at that. And then the other part of it is if it does go over to a drier end of the season, well, that would help dry that crop down in the field and therefore make it a much quicker harvest. So the models right now are suggesting a quick harvest. And by the way, since calculating from April 1st till today, we're currently sitting at 90% of the way to accumulating 2,500 GDUs. So that would be, for 100 to 110 day corn, that would be right on target for when it would be finished. So we're moving this crop along pretty quickly.
Any wild cards that you see in the weather forecast?
Yeah, the whole summer's been plagued by this pathetic La Nina that's not been able to get going, right? It keeps flashing. But lately we've seen some cooling in the Central Pacific. And I just looked, and based on the buoy network data, there's some cooler water beneath there that's going to surface. We might actually transition into a La Nina-like fall. And if that's the case, that would be a very interesting, progression finally of this La Nina that's really not been able to do much. It's been in too much competition with the warm water that's in the North Pacific. Now, there's a couple of aspects to that I find quite interesting. One, we went ahead and let the models run all the way out to January and took a look. I'll tell you something. If you're a snow lover in Illinois, everybody right now that loves snow wants the European model to verify perfectly because it would rock and roll right through us and set us up. But that's really far out there just for entertainment purposes only. But I think the other piece of this is the tropics, okay? So if that La Nina develops late this summer and fall, well, that could really calm things down over the tropics in terms of wind shear. But remember, when you have low wind shear, you have much better chances of having hurricanes become stronger. So the tropics aren't calm in terms of hurricane activity. And the National Hurricane Center just yesterday updated their forecast for the remainder of the season, and they gave it the highest I've ever seen at an 85% chance of being above normal. Colorado State did the same thing. They're actually calling for this season to be 200% of average on tropical cyclones. So while I say the models are going after this drier, warmer fall for us, the wild card is if we send a tropical system up the gut of the Mississippi, it comes right over us and dumps a lot of rain on us at the wrong time. So can't predict it out that far for those kind of events, what we need to be watching for it this year.
All right. Speaking of a lot of rain, why don't you check in on China for me too?
Yeah. So this week I spent some time really trying to dig in to the weather situation in China. And you know, there's a pretty big data void there. In other words, I can't get information out of them on what they've actually been observing for precipitation. So I went up top. I went up to satellites and I grabbed about, June 1st up until yesterday. And I found that over the Yangtze River, they have had places along that river that have had between 45 and now 65 inches of rain. 45 to 65 inches of rainfall. So just for perspective, that's 130% of our annual rainfall right here in Champaign. Okay? They had that since June 1st. So the flooding we're hearing about, any additional rainfall is going to make it worse. And what I just looked at here this morning was the long-range models through the next 15 days still have well above average precipitation forecast on the tributaries and on the western side of that river. So that river, downstream of it, there's 500 million people. So we need to be thinking a lot about what could happen if this flood problem continues as we're forecasting. Could be major implications in farming as well.
Yeah, so major implications in their availability of regional and local food supplies and what that means on the international export market area. And of course, just aid as it relates to any kind of disaster across the planet. So, hey, thank you so much for all the information. I sure do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Or you can listen to us in your favorite podcast application. Things like, well, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast, too. However you listen to us, thank you so much for taking your time and spending it with us here at Illinois Public Media. Speaking of podcasts, Commodity Week was recorded yesterday, and it's been up on the website and as a podcast since last night. You will hear a portion of that program in this first half hour of our ag programming today. And if you can stay with us here on the home station, the whole of Commodity Week will air. Many of these radio stations will air it over the weekend. And of course, it's already up on the website at willag.org. Our guests for Commodity Week this week included Arlen Suderman from StoneX at StoneX.com. He's out of Kansas City, Missouri. Jackie Vakes joined us from Total Farm Marketing, TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. And Mike Zuzlo was with us as well. He, of course, at GlobalComResearch.com. That's GlobalCom with two M's, Research.com. Started as usual by getting a list of items that we should talk about for the day. We asked Arlen Suderman that question.
Well, I would say that what's mattering right now in the markets is the supply side of the equation, and that's the private yield estimates coming out, which we kicked off the start of those this last week, and there have been some others as well. What's happening with China, and will it buy enough corn to offset that or not is another question. And then receiving very little attention, I think it's very good news for the grain industry, was a court decision late last month, and maybe you've covered it already. to give us day on the pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, and that was a big relief to farmers.
I have not covered it other than I knew that they did that, so we'll come back and talk to you about that one. Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing on your list.
Well, of course, South America, always on my list. China, definitely on my list. And concerns about China. I think it would be a better way of saying it, more than just straight China. And Ireland hit it. I mean, you know, when you look at the supplies, it just doesn't seem like we're going to get smaller. It seems like we're going to get bigger. And so those are big concerns for farmers.
And Mike Zuzla, GlobalCom Research.
I think the only other thing I'd touch on, Todd, is the equity markets and the gold record highs and how those fit in, and watching those real closely here in the next 30 to 45 days.
Jackie Vakes, I'll start with you. Let's talk a little bit about next week's crop production figures. That has to do, of course, with supply, but what are the expectations and your thoughts as to how USDA will manage this August report?
Well, I think it's going to be, it could be what you would call a non-report. In other words, most everything is going to be into the market. Like Arlen said, you know, StoneX has been out. Face, you know, formerly Informa has been out with numbers varying anywhere from the bean number definitely higher than what the USDA is at, the corn number higher at StoneX and slightly higher at Face. You know, so I think that when we get that far, we'll already have all of this. So it's going to take a big divergence off of this to actually cause any major problems or any big changes. It could be the point that maybe puts a bottom into this market, perhaps. But it's going to be an interesting report. Normally we don't see any acreage changes, even though we're hearing higher acreages in some places. But I don't know. You know, you try to talk to farmers about what's going on, and they prefer to be focused on the fields rather than on marketing, it seems like, at this point, because of where the levels are. And so maybe next week will help us out.
Arlen, can you tell me a little bit about the numbers that StoneX developed and how that comes about? And I don't know if you want to take up those numbers as they compare to USDA, I'm sure you do, or to Face, which is the old Informa company.
Yeah, what we do is we survey our customers and say, in your area, if you had to pick a number right now, what you think the final, not the August number, but the final, what you think the final yield will be. And granted, that's hardest on soybeans since the critical month of August is ahead of us yet on August 1st. What do you think the final yield will be? We put it all together into an estimate, and we came up with 182.4 bushels for corn and 54.2 for soybeans. That's 2.2% above trend for the corn. So that's not that far above trend. We're just not used to 180 plus yields. So that's why it's kind of eye popping. The soybean number was eye popping to me, that people would be willing to go that high in their responses, even though we have the critical month of August ahead of us. That says a lot about how they feel their soybeans look right now. And I think speaks with a lot of confidence. And I've been surprised at how many farmers I've had respond to me on social media where it's taboo to talk about high yields and say, I think you're too low.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX. Join us on our Commodity Week program. We'll have more from him and Jackie Vakes and Mike Zuzlow in just a moment.